cards with a 6-9 swing, man. You can shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is a show for Monday, September 7th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, two football writers just happy to have the first cupcake game out of the way, Mike DeFerdinando.
Hey, guys.
And Kyle Maestri.
40 to 60 minutes of relentless effort on this podcast.
That's what we got right here, 40 to 60 minutes, guys. Let's do this. Obviously, we're coming up, going to recap some of the Charleston Southern game stuff. 62-3 is a blowout. There's really not a whole lot to talk about in terms of what happened in the game, but a lot of little side stories we're going to talk about. So let's dive straight into that. Let's talk about some guys who, you know, maybe we didn't expect to start that did, and some guys who didn't start that maybe we expected them to. Let's start off with Will Hill. Kyle, what can you talk about the safety situation?
Well, the coaches were very tight-lipped with their starters heading into the week for no apparent reason. But this one, I guess there was an apparent reason. They don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, namely Ahmad Black, who lost his job because Will Hill was out there with Major Wright. And I do believe Ahmad Black has lost his job as one of the starting two safeties at this point. That kind of remains to be seen, but that's the feeling I get. Will Hill's too good. They can't keep him off the field. And they really like Major Wright, whereas Ahmad Black, I get the sense, he's kind of ruffled some feathers, and he was kind of a one-hit wonder, so to speak. So I don't know. What do you think about it, Deeper?
Well, I mean, Will Hill has no ceiling, right?
Right. So, no, he's ceilingless.
But yeah, I agree. I think Ahmad's probably lost his job at this point. And it's not really a commentary on him. It's just that Will's better.
Right.
I think Ahmad's kind of the third wheel at this point. Like, you know, we really like Will Hill, and we really like Major Wright, and you're here too, so you're going to have to start, you know, you're going to have to sit. He did play quite a bit, though, in the game.
The ultimate slap in the face to me was that he was on special teams again. He's back on the kick cover unit. It was like a role reversal. It's like, not only is Will Hill taking your job, you can go play his old position, which is special teams.
That's true.
This is like one of us having to come back in the office at night, like night edit.
Will Hill missed a couple tackles in that, though. I remember there were one he just got juked out of his cleats. I felt a little bad for him out there.
Yeah, the guy left him, as they say, as the kids say. But
what other guys were out there starting that maybe you didn't expect
it? Well, defense was insane. Like, don't think the starting defense will look anything like this for games that matter. But, all right, we thought Janoris Jenkins would be out because he had some off-the-field issues in the offseason. So Meyer didn't say this, but he was suspended for this game by, you know, all common sense. So, unbelievably, Wandy Pierre-Louis gets a start, not Marquis Anderson. They ran a lot of nickel there right from the beginning, and Anderson was the nickel back, so maybe they're just like, look, in real games, that's where you're going to play, so we're just going to leave you there, and we'll just slide Wandy in, who promptly missed the tackle on the first play of the game. So that was not so much of a surprise that Jenkins was out, a little bit of a surprise that Wandy was in.
Yeah, just a triumphant return for Wandy. I know everyone in the Swamp was thrilled to have him out there, and good to see him back.
I'm not going to lie, I wasn't up in the press box because I don't cover football, but I heard a lot of groans when Wandy came out there to start the game. But I, you know, personally, I got a little bit of joy for him when he came. He was one of the first two to run out onto the field for the Gators. He was doing some sort of weird run, you know, just hands up in the air everywhere.
As he was going nuts.
Like his drum major, like leaning back. Like.
Exactly. That was Wandy, so, you know. Well, good for him.
Sadly,
won't play much for the rest of the year.
Sadly, my friends really like Wandy, and they tried to start a Wandy for Heisman campaign with the 4 his jersey number.
Just for the
Yeah.
Wow, unbelievable.
We're also talking about Wandy today in the press or in the conference room before interviews, and they were talking about players who have like made big plays but have done really nothing. So they were talking about the Wandy play against Arkansas in the SEC championship game, but I contend that Wandy's never made a big play, even though he has multiple touchdowns to his credit. All he did was fall on a fumble that Fish made in the SEC championship game, did nothing to earn it, and then Matt Stafford gifted him a pick six that any of us in this room could have ran back.
But he had the awesome flip into the end zone subsequently after.
He's a great celebrator. You also recall the making it rain, chicken noodle soup dance. And the
swag
SEC
is
champion.
Off the charts with Wandy, which is really the most important thing you look for in a football player.
Make it till you make it.
Yeah, you wonder where that comes from, but moving on. What else on the defense did we see?
At tackle, you had Jay Howard starting, who... You know, our boy Dan McCartney, he's a straight shooter. He told us he would start. He started. Meyer tried to, like, go back on that a little bit, but you saw him out there. And then Marsh was out with an ankle. And I was a little surprised they didn't just slide Terrence Sanders over. but instead they went with Brandon Antoine, which also over Omar Hunter. And Antoine, that was kind of just like off the charts. Nobody thought he would start. He's had so many devastating injuries. He could have died like last year.
He's in a wheelchair, right?
Yeah, no. Brandon Antoine's a really great story. It was amazing that he was out there, and good for him. Like, great job.
So what does this say about Omar Hunter, that he can't play over The Walking Dead and Brandon
Antoine?
It says
nothing but bad things about Omar Hunter, in my opinion. I think Bobby really makes the best point about bringing in linemen, where he always says, I'd rather have guys that are fast and play end in high school and beef up and move to the middle instead of, like, the big fat guys who clog the middle and then you try to cut their weight and get them to work harder when they get here. Seemingly always true. I can't think of an example counter to that. Bobby's pretty much always right about that, so.
Throughout Terrence Cody. Mount Cody out of Alabama. Sort of the largest human being
I've
ever seen.
If you can get to 400 pounds, you're good. But don't come in at 350. Okay. You're going to be screwed.
And at that point, you're playing like the 3-4 where your job is literally just like
just
take
be
up
fat.
Space.
Yeah.
Be fat. Take up 2 to 3 guys whenever you can.
I just want you to be fat. Can you do that?
And Omar Hunter has not apparently not filled that job description yet, so they're going with
nearly
the
fat
guys.
Enough, apparently.
All right, and then arguably the surprise of the night was Jermaine Cunningham did not start, seemingly out of left field. I heard nothing about this. I don't know if you did.
Yeah,
leading up to
I was shocked. I was looking for him the whole first half.
And then Tratow didn't get the start. Yeah. They go with William Green, inexplicably. So,
I mean, William Green's a guy they like a lot.
Yeah.
He made some big plays
apparently
on special teams last year, so I think he's probably someone to look out for in the future. But I was surprised, too, that Tratow wasn't the guy.
Do you think they did these things there just because it was Charleston Southern and they knew it was going to be a blowout and, you know, they hold sort of the actual backups for later?
I think that's partially it, but I think they wanted guys in the roles that they're going to be in likely for the rest of the year because I think Tratow, they like a Dunlap spot on the other side of the line, and then Cunningham, I guess they're trying to develop Green there. Huh. So I think, like, if something happened to Cunningham where he was going to be out for, like, 5 weeks, they'd move Tratow over there. But I think since this was just a one-game thing, also Meyer said Cunningham wasn't ready to play, which is why he didn't play, which is usually code for he was suspended for doing something bad. So we don't know what it was, but that's what he always says when someone's suspended.
Yeah, a lot of guys have been not ready to play. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Superstar players have not been ready to play. Percy Harvin, an off-time victim of not being not ready to play.
Sometimes so. I'm not ready to play. You know, I just come out here, Kyle Mayfield, not ready to play. He didn't warm up his voice. He didn't get his stat sheet ready. Like, how is Jermaine Cunningham, a senior all-SEC selection, he wasn't ready to play? Like, he wasn't good enough? He didn't work hard enough? Or, like, he didn't know the plays?
He only gave going 3 to 5 seconds.
Yeah,
yeah.
It wasn't in shape.
Yeah,
it's all
that's
bull.
A joke. He was probably suspended. Hopefully, something about that will come out in the future. But
don't hold your breath. But
was there anybody else on defense that we were surprised by seeing out there? Move over to the offensive side.
No, I think that was it as far as starters go. Yeah. That was the rundown. And everybody else was as expected.
Then on the offensive line, had a couple of guys, namely Matt Patchen, did not start. Carl Johnson got the start at left tackle, and James Wilson got the start at left guard. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the way they decided to go. I don't know what the deal is. They all love Patch and they talk about him all the time, but I guess James Wilson's done enough to impress them. I think Carl Johnson's a beast, and he's made it known that he wants to play left tackle, so I think they may be kind of catering to him, keeping the big man happy.
Oh, no, I think Patchen's definitely the guy they want for the future, and I don't think you're going to see this continue. I think I'm not sure. Maybe James had like a really good week of practice, and that's a reward for that or something.
Yeah,
or
maybe.
It's a game where they could do that and not really risk anything, but I think Patchen's the guy you're going to see going forward.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of just like, you know, this doesn't count down the line. It doesn't matter, really. Just, you know, let's play who we can, play who's, you know, reward who's had a good week of practice or whatever, and, you know, get some time for some guys who might not get time later on.
And in this scenario, this one makes, like, matters the least or makes the most sense. It's just because, you know, both of those guys are going to see playing time. They want to get a rotation going a little bit in case someone gets hurt, which Carl Johnson did later in the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were going to use both of them a lot this game, so it didn't really matter who they tried it out there first.
What's the deal with his injury? Do we know yet?
There's no, like, report or anything. He had his right knee wrapped on the sideline and then was out of pads, you know, after halftime. And I talked to Marquise Pouncey today, and he said that Carl Johnson practiced and that he looked fine. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what Marquise Pouncey said. He's a nice guy. I have no reason to think he was lying to me. So I actually believe that one. I guess he was out there today.
All right. I guess we'll move on to another one of the big stories of the game. Some of the wide receiver stuff. We already said coming into this game, like, it's probably the biggest question mark position for the team. And then Riley Cooper stepped up out of nowhere, had a career-high 5 catches in a game, which is outlandish.
Believe he's only had 4 catches in a game.
But he looked great out there, I thought. You know, I mean, it was against Charleston Southern or whatever, but he was, you know, between throwing up and being sick on the, you know, for the rest of the game. He caught a great 68-yard touchdown. Looked pretty good. I think he could.
He did not catch a 68-yard touchdown. He caught a 68-yard play. Did not go for a touchdown.
That's right.
Jeffrey Demps ran it in afterwards, you might recall.
That play really hurt me in a bet Kyle and I had during the game. So Riley Cooper did not score. I remember that.
Anyway, let's talk about some of the other receivers, especially Deontay Thompson. I want you to answer about this, Kyle, because I was down on Deontay Thompson.
Yeah, he had a bad two plays. He false started and sent him back to 2nd and 15, I think it was, and then he drops a touchdown when Tebow hits him in stride on a bomb. And, he got behind the defense, so I will say that. He was stretching the field as I thought he would, but I don't know. I don't want to answer for this yet. I mean,
he's also not targeted again throughout the rest of the game.
He did nothing to support my claim that he's going to be good, but I'm definitely not ready to proclaim him like a bust for the season after the Charleston Southern game.
I was ready to proclaim him a bust before last game.
So is David Nelson a bust then also? Because he didn't do anything.
I'm kidding.
Okay,
Urban certainly didn't seem happy with Thompson after the game. So
no. I think he's trying to just make a point that you can't drop plays like that. He just said, like, we need somebody to be productive at that position. We can't have that. You know, just generic, like, that was unacceptable, which it was. Brandon James also dropped a touchdown.
That's right.
I thought was more inexcusable.
Yeah.
The ball's coming right at him. It hits him essentially in the chest and just bounces off.
Yeah.
He's squared up to the ball. He doesn't have to run after the catch. Deontay's was a harder play.
As we all know, Brandon James only catches passes over the shoulder.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that was what caused the drop.
He was a little confused.
Yeah. A friend of mine.
It wasn't end over end, so he didn't know what to do with it.
A friend of mine at the game joked that pass was too well thrown for Brandon James to catch that. He was really confused when it was coming at him. He was out of position because he was expecting it to be more poorly thrown. But, I mean, that was pretty bad, too. So two, like, questionable plays from the receivers who will probably see some time this year. I don't know. It's going to be something to watch going forward.
All you need to know about Brandon James' attitude afterwards when he was being interviewed, somebody asked him about the drop, and he was just like, yeah, you know, I don't know what happened. He's like, that's inexcusable, but, you know, I've been catching so great in practice leading up to the game. Like, so I've just been catching everything in the offseason. My hands are great. Like, just goes on and on about how he has the most amazing hands of all time. And then right after, he also muffed a punt, I'd like to point out, with those amazing hands.
Yeah.
Then I asked him, I was like, oh, you know, they bottled you up on punts a little bit. Were they doing something special out there? How come? He's like, I wouldn't say they bottled me up. He's like, there were, you know, my guys didn't block some guys every once in a while. I couldn't get free, but I wouldn't say I was bottled up. He had 13 yards on 4 returns. That's the definition of bottled up, okay, Brandon, if you're listening.
I want to point out that Brandon James' voice is on par. Perfect.
Uncanny impression.
Yeah.
But he did get the kickoff return for a touchdown, which, by the way, when I heard that was the first one in 10 years, unbelievable to me.
Well, I wrote two sidebars on this. Brandon James, first kickoff return in Florida since 1999. Bo Carroll, who apparently is on the staff, was the last person to do it against LSU. 100 yards, in case you were wondering, which I know you all were. He also became the second player in Florida history to have a punt return for a touchdown and kick return for a touchdown to his name. The first was a guy named Harvin Clark, who I've never heard of, who played, I believe, in the early 70s. And then, it was a big goal of his. He's had three called back in his career. They were trying to get the monkey off his back, so to speak. I know Urban was real happy with him when he came off the sideline. He got that done, 85 yards.
One interesting thing in that is I thought it was funny Cooper was kind of taking over the Keystone Moore role of, like, blocking in front of him.
The escort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the escort service down the field, yeah. But he made a key block there, you know, at the beginning of it, and then he caught up to him going back down the field.
Blazing speed.
Well, Brandon, two things on that. Brandon James said Cooper was talking some stuff to him about that afterwards, kind of making fun of him about how he caught up to him, he could have passed him, whatever. But, you know, James, of course, said he shut it down at the 20-yard line, and he was just letting Riley get the kicker. That's what he said. And then the other thing is, afterwards, Chris Rainey had a quote, I don't know word for word, but it was something like, let me tell y'all this. Riley Cooper is the fastest white boy I ever saw.
Fastest white dude, yeah.
White dude, you're right. Fastest white dude I ever saw. It's not word for word, but it's very close.
Yeah.
And also, I want to talk about this. Some people tried to run that in their stories afterwards, and at least one editor, I'm not going to say from where, cut the quote because it sounded racist to him.
What?
What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I can see why they did it, but I would have ran it.
I would have run it.
Also, what responsibility does the newspaper have to Chris Rainey being racist, even if he was racist? In fact, if he was racist, they should have ran it because people should know that.
All, it's not racist.
It's not racist
at all.
It's
a compliment, if anything.
Exactly.
It's a huge compliment.
As Kroll would say, take it with the spirit in which it was intended. And he was obviously trying to compliment the guy. Also, he might be the fastest white guy Chris Rainey's ever seen. That might be a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Maybe Chris Rainey's never seen a white person faster than Riley Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, never watched Tim Dwight. I don't know, but
yeah, that was. I don't agree with that situation at all.
So weird. It's like even if it was a flagrantly racist remark, attributed to Chris Rainey. It's not like your writer wrote the racist remark.
Yeah, and it's not like somebody asked him, like, "Is Riley Cooper the fastest white guy you've ever seen?" And he goes, "Yeah, he's the fastest white guy you've ever seen." Like, no, he wasn't set up like that. He's just making a comment. This is why they bottled Chris Rainey up, from letting him say fun stuff like he did that, and like when he used to, you know, it's good to be Chris Rainey, right, and all that stuff.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Let's talk about one more wide receiver thing. David Nelson, you mentioned, he only had one catch. They just kind of shut him down for, you know, just fear of injury or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he just didn't get open, I thought.
Huh. I mean, I'm not going to read into that. It was Charleston Southern. He's a good player.
It's not a big deal. But also the way the Charleston Southern game went, it's like you have to make a big play if you're going to touch the ball, because the offense was only out there for 1 minute at a time, almost literally.
Yeah.
Sometimes not even 1 minute. But the way, like, David Nelson's not going to catch a 50-yard play. So, I mean, he's going to help you in third and eight situations where you need to move the chains. He's going to help you in the red zone. He's going to block for you. And that's not really how this game went. It was like, dump it to our fast guys, and they're going to run it from 70 yards out sometimes.
Aaron Hernandez looked pretty good, though.
He did.
At tight end, got that one touchdown. Got me some fantasy points as well.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Big weekend for him, at least for that.
Yeah, I got one more thing I want to talk about. All right, so me and Adam, we were talking about this before the Kyle got here, but so Brandon James has 5 kick returns for touchdowns in his career, 4 punts in the kickoff last night. Mm-hmm. Does that not seem surprisingly low to you? I know he's had a bunch of called back, but I would have put the number much closer to 10.
Really?
Yeah.
It seems like he's like a couple every year. It's only been like
for the credit he has, is like the greatest return man like in all history.
Right. Let me break it down for you. I'm gonna break it down for you right quick. All right, his freshman year, it was like he didn't really do anything. It was just like a surprise that he was good. You're like, oh, this 5'5" kid is like not a complete disaster. Like, he can go out there and play pretty well. He probably didn't do anything well. And his sophomore year, I don't know how many he had. I don't even know the numbers. This is how it's perceived to me. His sophomore year, he went out there. I imagine he took at least 3 of those back his sophomore year, if not all 4 of those punts. I don't know. His sophomore
year. One was his freshman year. It was against, like, Western Carolina.
Okay. So probably 3 of them?
And one was last year.
One was last
Tennessee,
year.
So, it was, right? So only 2 of them. I think it was 2.
All right. One, two. Well, in my head, his sophomore year was, like, his breakout year, at least, where you're like, oh, Brandon James is awesome. Like, you want him back there. Like, he's a stud. Then last year, I feel like they just went with the punt block as much as they could, because Demps, of course, was just getting in there blocking everything. Rainey's getting in there blocking everything, so they just went to the pump block. Carlos Dunlap was blocking it, just standing straight up, putting his hands up.
That's not a bad point.
But the perception is that, like, he has all these touchdowns. That's at least how I feel, that he has, like, all these touchdowns. He's a threat to take it out every
time. He is. Five is a lot.
In 4 years, I mean, he's averaging, you know,
is he bordering on the line of, like, being maybe overrated as a return guy?
No, how many does your boy Trinan Holiday have? Probably 2.
I don't know. I'm sure it's a ton, though.
I'm sure
it's not as many as James, but he's a much more exciting offensive player.
I think CJ Spiller might have more than him, actually, your boy.
Well, he is great. He so might have more than that Brandon James.
He took one back this weekend as well. I don't know. It doesn't surprise me he's around 5. That's what he's expected to be around, I think. I don't know. Every one you get feels like 2. They're such big plays that it's like, it's epic when it's happening. I don't know.
All right, let's move on to another position here. Let's talk about the one you and I have wanted to talk about since the show started, Kyle, running backs. Talk about Jeff Demps. Just go ahead.
I mean, Jeff Demps is the greatest player that's ever played in Florida. I think we can safely say that after the Charleston Southern game.
Yeah, sure.
But in all seriousness, Jeff Demps is a man. But Chris Rainey, I thought, had, like, the play of the game. The 76-yard run was impressive. It's just fun watching both of them. They're both such home run hitters. Moody kind of puts me to sleep when he comes in. I know he ran well. He ran physical. He got in there. He broke some tackles. Jeff Demps, Chris Rainey, they don't have to break tackles because nobody even touches them on their way to the end zone. Exactly.
The funniest thing about the Chris Rainey run is that after the game, he was talking to a group of reporters, and he told me that as he was running, he looked up at the brand-new Jumbotron to see if anyone was behind him, and that he's done it, like, several times in his career, which I thought was awesome.
A lot of players cop to that.
Yeah.
Demp said he does not, and he said he does not lean his head back as he runs.
That's right. Head down.
And that's why Demp never gets caught.
Sure. I mean, Rainey almost got caught there at the end, and that epic dive, the back, you know, on his back dive into the end zone. Very impressive run for him, though, and he's now averaging 76 yards per carry because that was his only rush. Like, why, first of all? Why was that his only rush? Just didn't want to...
There's not enough offensive plays, man. I'm telling you, every drive with the starters was literally like an average. It was like 5 plays, 85 yards, minute and 15 seconds.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. He just couldn't get enough touches, so I don't know. Demps only had 5 carries, right? I think he had 5.
Yeah, I mean, Urban talked about feeling bad that only Chris only got one carry, but he didn't want to put him out in the second half and, like, risk an injury to one of your best players, so yeah. It's understandable.
Dempse had 5 rushes for 89 yards, so, yeah. And 2 touchdowns.
That's right. The end zone stopped him twice. Rainey will be prominently featured, I think. I think, you know, the coaches have talked him up, said that he's been doing a better job. He's, you know, the guys all like him on the team. The linemen like him. The penalties are good friends with him. And, you know, he got out there, took one carry to the house. You can't really ask him to do any better than that. So I think this team should embrace a running identity, by the way. I think they should identify the fact that we got a lot of ballers in the backfield and not so many split out at wide receiver. We should just get them the ball at all times. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
It's one of the most talented, I would argue, so why not?
Yeah, I agree. I think that Jeff Dempsey is like the starter or what have you, but I think you're really going to see them kind of work as a tandem and be like a two-headed monster.
Mm-hmm.
Come up with whatever nicknames you will for the two of them, but they're going to tear people apart all season.
I couldn't help but think how angry, once again, I was in the stands, and this angry, like, this like, drunk 30-year-old sitting next to me who said he'd been sitting in those seats for 27 years, which I found a little hard to believe. First of all, but he was talking like, man, Dempse is just a track star. Rainey's a running back, man.
Oh,
I was
God.
Like, oh, Kyle'd be so angry right now.
He's tough between the tackles, like Chris Rainey.
Yeah, I mean, he made some pretty sweet moves there where Dempse just outruns everybody. He's so much faster than everybody. let's move on. Let's talk about some of the most impressive freshmen you saw out there. There were certainly a lot of them playing. At one point, the entire offensive line was made up of all freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely got to see a lot of them. Let's just go with one for now. Who impressed you the most?
I'll stay with my guy, Gillisley, who I predicted to be the most impressive freshman over the course of the season. But he had a touchdown. He was prominently featured on one of their drives towards the end where he had the touchdown. He got like 5 carries in a row or about 5 carries in a row. And he, you know, picked up some yards, ran. He went hard. He went real hard out there. And I thought Gillisley did a good job.
Yeah, he ended with 6 rushes for 41 yards. Pretty, you know, not bad for the limited time everybody sees in that game. Right.
I'm gonna go with your boy, John Bostic. I think he led the team in tackles with like 7. Played well. I think he's obviously kind of being groomed to be the heir apparent to Brandon Spikes in the middle there. So I think he's a good player for the future.
Well, you completely took the one I was going to go with there. Thank you, Deefer.
Sorry, man.
I should have gone to myself next and just left you to suffer for who you wanted to go with next. So I thought Jelani Jenkins, he was out there for a long time as well.
Yeah. He played. He played some football.
he made another good pick. Xavier Nixon played well on the offensive line.
Yeah.
I think he's someone to watch out for, too.
I thought most of the freshman line looked pretty good. I mean, mm-hmm. You can make the argument for the guy whose name I can't pronounce. He got the really long hair. You could not see his name.
Alla Jajan.
Looked good. Like, I thought all those freshmen.
Jalapio. I don't know. I didn't watch them. I'm not going to lie. So I don't really know how they did.
But, yeah, I mean, like, Brantley didn't get sacked or whatever out there.
Lyman
held their own against a mediocre defensive line, so it's good for them. One other thing that just randomly hit me. Florida did not have any sacks in the
No,
in
they
that
did
game.
Not.
Did that take anybody aback once they saw that?
Surprising, I'd say.
I think the quarterback from Charleston Southern was actually pretty decent. He was pretty mobile back there, so I think he did a good job of avoiding the sack.
Charleston Southern wasn't nearly as inept as I would have suspected, as far as, like, they didn't just roll over and take it. Like, they kind of put up a fight. I mean, they only scored 3 points. They didn't really get anything going. But their quarterback, you know, he eluded some defenders. They made some plays. They broke some ankles every once in a while. I'm just fairly impressed.
They didn't score, but they put up kind of impressive, like, offensive yardage. They put
over
they
scored, they 350,
went, yeah,
right?
350 on Florida's, like, I mean, second half was all the backups, but still. Yeah.
No, I was impressed with them. They covered the spread. They covered the 63-point spread.
Yeah, it's true. But one thing that also contributes to that, and it was the next thing I wanted to talk about, is Florida did not show any wrinkles, as we talked about it on here a lot. Everything was very vanilla, very basic on offense and defense.
Right.
Talk about that philosophy. You didn't agree with that, I'm assuming, right?
No. Let me make my point clear. I don't think there will be wrinkles ever. Okay, so that's why they didn't show any. My point was that if you're going to use it down the stretch, this is the time to work out the kinks.
Okay.
So, I've been on record as saying I don't believe an under center package is ever going to come. And it didn't in this game. So, I think that's further evidence that it's not going to come. But, you know, I think it's stupid for them, you know, to hold back anything just because they don't want to offend anyone. Or, like, if you need the work, get the work in. That comes first. So I think the reason you didn't see anything is because you're not going to see anything. They're not going to do any under center stuff, and they're probably not going to do any Wildcat stuff. I think the whole Joe Hayden thing was a farce at this point.
And if we want to go down the under center road, we kind of caught Urban in a bit of a fib yesterday after the game. He told us in his press conference that they had the under center package in the game plan, but like did not use it for whatever reason. And Tim Tebow, about 20 minutes later, told us there never was an under center package in the game plan. So take that for what you will.
There you go. One argument from your perspective, Kyle, that I like is like, he's not actually planning to do any of this stuff. He's just keeping Lane Kiffin up at night. Like, Lane Kiffin right now is like frantically in his office, just game planning for the Wildcat, for under center, for the spread, and all, you know, the bombs that brings.
And you did see some, no, they did use one thing that was kind of cool. They went to a jumbo package on Tebow's run,
yeah.
And it was Tratow who got in there at fullback. Like they said, they've been using him. It was Pridemore and it was Moody. Yeah. So you had just big bodies back there banging, you know, to push the line there and get the touchdown on the goal line. So that was the one thing that they did show.
There's actually another thing too, is that bonsai package they were talking about.
Yeah.
The philosophy.
This is something they're going to use. They wanted to experiment. They said they stole this from Oklahoma. They're very upfront about it, which is smart. You know, take things you like from your opponent, and they would just, you know, they call it, you know, I guess Tebow says bonsai at the line or whatever, and they all like rush to get lined up real quick. And one time they got the snap off, like, before the guy could get off the field, the 13th or the 12th man for Charleston Southern, and before the chains were set up. Yeah. So they definitely were experimenting with the hurry up, which will actually help them win games, and they probably actually plan to use later.
Yeah.
And I think the jumbo package is definitely something that you're going to see. I think that's the I formation stuff that you're going to see. Because if you guys remember, they actually used a very similar formation in 2006 in the goal line situations where they brought in, like, two fullbacks, and Tebow was out there and just, like, pound the ball right up the middle.
That's not I, though.
It's not I, but I mean, it's more traditional is what I meant. It's a more traditional kind of offense of, like, big-bodied.
Yeah, it relies less on the speed they usually do. It's more like a traditional NFL type, just get your biggest blockers in there and, you know, try to push the ball right up the middle. That was interesting. Let's talk about some disappointments from the game. Players, philosophies, whatever you want to talk about disappointment-wise. Anything spring to mind? The fact that it was so boring, perhaps?
I lost $3 to Kyle.
No shame in that. A lot of people lose money to me.
How so, if I may ask?
Are we going to get into this?
Sure. I mean, if you want to give a brief rundown of how you lost $3, feel free.
All right. Basically, before the game, while we were enjoying our pregame meal, Kyle and I came home. That's how we wanted to make the game a little more interesting, since it was Charleston Southern. We each took four offensive players, excluding quarterbacks. Whoever scored the most touchdowns won, and we bet like $1 on the difference of whoever scored the most touchdowns. Kyle took all the running backs and won. I took the receivers and lost.
There you go.
James, last pick, got me a touchdown.
True.
Disappointments, though. I feel like I was disappointed with David Nelson. I don't know. David Nelson's kind of supposed to be the guy now, or at least a guy, and he was not a guy at all out there on Saturday. So I don't know what happened to him. Like I said, this game wasn't really conducive to a guy like David Nelson getting touches, but I expected him to get a couple grabs.
Yeah, I think the receiving core as a whole is probably the most disappointing thing, other than Cooper looking pretty good.
Right.
All right. The guy I'm going to go with is actually maybe a bit of a surprise. I think John Brantley didn't play all that great, despite sort of throwing for more touchdowns than Tebow. I think he didn't look really sharp. He ran the ball way too much. He didn't really look great in the passing game. I think John Brantley, everyone talks about how great he is and how they can put him out there against SEC opponents and not worry. Like, if anything happens to Tebow, they're in good hands. And I'm starting to think maybe that's not quite the case at this point. Or maybe his first game jitters, but I don't know. John Brantley didn't look great.
Didn't Urban say after the game, though, like, the one thing you wish he'd done was run more aggressively? Like, I felt like he ran quite a bit. It was kind of, you know.
Too aggressive.
He was running scared, not aggressive. There's a difference. Nah, I don't know. But I actually kind of agree with that. I thought Brantley was kind of disappointing, although if you had a freshman offensive line in front of you and you were throwing to Justin Williams and Cade Holiday, who both caught touchdowns, I'd like to point out, I don't think you'd look like Tim Tebow out there either. You know, I think if he gets to line up with the first team, I think Brantley looks pretty good out there passing the ball. But, you know, he's playing with receivers. He's playing with Frankie Hammond, Amarius Hines, TJ Lawrence, guys like that, who, you know, may become good players later, but they're not exactly established, like, studs at this point. So I'm not going to put it all on him. But I was a little disappointed with Brantley.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a worthy point. Was there anything else from the game that springs to mind? Were there any further injuries at the...
You're not going to take a shot at Deontay? I thought for sure you were as a disappointment.
I feel like I've taken enough shots at Deontay. Right, I'll take another one if you want me to. How are you a starting receiver and you can't catch a flyer out from Tim Tebow? It's your job. Run down the field and catch a flyer out from Tim Tebow. You're fast. That's all you have to do. Get behind the defense, catch the ball. He can't do that.
It was an embarrassing job.
Thank you. Okay, and before we move on to our last segment, our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week, we're going to revisit the Gator Guarantees we made on August 24th, 2009 in that show. I'll start off with mine, because I was correct. I said Will Hill would be a starting safety by the LSU game. Didn't even take that many games. It took one game for me to be right, kids. Enjoy.
Nice. Very nice.
And you have no ceiling. These things are possible, I guess.
That's true. So let's go to the rest of them. So you, Deford, you said John Brantley would throw for more yards and touchdowns than Tim Tebow in this game. You're half right. Two touchdowns to Tebow's one, and not as many yards. I think it's 67.
I mean, Brantley was a bit of a disappointment for me, obviously. Yeah. So. Sorry, John.
And then Phil Kegler, who's not on this show, said that Tim Tebow's injury, the back injury I think it was at the time, was more serious than people were letting on, and he would only play one series into the second quarter. Both things seems to be incorrect. Tebow looked like a kid out there, just, you know, happy to be there. He didn't show any signs of injury, and I think he played two full series into the second quarter. So Phil was wrong. We were, I'd say we're 1.5 out of 3 there. Not bad. Kyle, yours is still...
Long-term.
Yeah, yours is still you're still outstanding, your bet is. You said you'd win the Fantasy League. How's that going for you so far?
Poorly. Very poorly.
All right,
Juice
on.
Williams, not the steal in the third round I thought he was.
There you go. Let's give out our Reggies and Kyles, and we'll start with Kyle's. Start with yours.
Sure.
Kyle.
Well, my Kyle is going to go to the ACC as a conference. Sorry to any team that pulled their weight in that conference. I can't think of one offhand. Virginia Tech goes down to Alabama. No real shame in that, but still a loss, a blemish on the ACC record. Then Maryland goes out as 21-point dogs to California and gets completely whooped on by the Bears, losing me money. And then we go to the two biggest embarrassments. They lost two games to 1AA schools this weekend. Yeah. You had Duke going down to Richmond. Now, Duke, you know, perennial bottom feeder in the ACC. Richmond, perennial national title contender at the 1AA level. Some excuses to be made. Not really, though. You still lost to 1AA school. And then the shame of all shames is Virginia gets beat by William & Mary. I didn't know William & Mary played football until last night. And they lost by about 10 points. Yeah. It wasn't even, like, it wasn't even very close. They didn't even lose in a last-second field goal. So I couldn't be more disappointed with the ACC. They sucked the whole weekend. They might be the worst conference in college. They might be worse than the Big East. I don't know. We'll see.
Right. Shout out to William & Mary, the tribe.
All right, so there you go. We got our weekly William & Mary shout-out in. Look forward to that next week as well. I'll give my Kyle, this is a warning, a rant's incoming. Like I said, I am not, you know, I'm not a football writer. I'm not sitting in the press box like you, the privileged minority. I'm out in the stands with the common folk. I'm out there with the rest of the people.
Look, we've done our time. We've all been there. I did 3 years, all right, man?
All right, well, I'm serving my third right now. But
like Dwayne Bowe, I did my time.
I did my time. So I'm out there. I'm thirsty, all right? I walk from my apartment to that game. I am not one of the people who brings a drink into the game. I'm just obeying all the rules and everything. So, you know, after halftime, I'm getting thirsty. I want a Gatorade. I'm willing to pay the, you know, overpriced $4 for a Gatorade in the stadium. So I walk out there. I don't have cash. Mostly because I'm poor and I don't have cash. I have a debit card, all right? I have a debit card. So I walk out there. I just want a Gatorade. I go up to, I think, 4 concession stands. 4 of them. All of them tell me that one of them accepts debit cards on the side I was on. In reality, none of them do. And it was this ridiculous, like, cat and mouse game where they're like, oh no, the one 2 down does. I'm like, all right, I go there. No, the one to the left of us does. No, the one 3 to the right of us does. And I was like, I was just there. Take my card, give me something to drink. They don't. None of that happens. I'm incredibly disappointed. I left thirsty. I had to buy like $1.25, like wild cherry Pepsi outside, like by Murphy Commons in the dorms. But another part of this rant is that you can't get any like cell phone service in there. So standing out there by the concession stands, I call my buddy Pedro. I want something to drink. I need his cash. He can't get the call. 5 minutes later, he gets my text that I sent. I'm like, hey, can I borrow $4? 5 minutes later, it's no good to me. I'm back in the stands, unhappy and still thirsty. So there you go. My Kyle Jackson goes to the swamp.
Yeah, the media lounge didn't take debit cards either. They mostly gave me my drinks for free. So I can't relate to your plight, Adam. I'm sorry. The wireless signal was a little weak from time to time. Kept me from checking all my games.
By the way, I couldn't check any scores on my BlackBerry. It was BlackBerry that I'm paying a data fee for every month. Couldn't get any of that. No, I just had to rely on the Swamp scoreboard, you know, cycle around through that once I got through the crappy MLB scores of the night that just depressed me every time a Rays score came up and I realized I lost to the Tigers again.
The desserts were a little subpar.
What? The brownies were dope.
They're all, the brownies halftime, all they had was Oreos.
Yeah. I feel your chips. Pain, fans and listeners. I feel your pain. These guys don't.
We only got fed twice for free. I'd like to point that out. That was a sham. We got a huge buffet before the game and then pizza afterwards. Like, they can't give us something classier than pizza for our second free meal in 4 hours. I mean, the people really just slacking. It sucks to be a football writer.
I'd also like to note that in the stands, I had to do that thing that everybody has to do in the swamp where you don't actually watch the game standing forward. You do that thing where, like, your shoulder is facing the field and you're, like, it's like you're posing for a family photo or something and, like, your shoulder is like your chin is on your shoulder and you're watching the game that way, side to side with four people.
It's like a prom photo.
Exactly, yeah. And you keep moving, like, seats to seats. Like, my buddy Pedro was like, we're at seat two now. We started the game at seat five. I'm like, how did this happen? The fan experience, like, it's disheartening once you become unbiased and impartial, I gotta say.
Here's to hoping next week's noon kickoff means an omelet chef.
Yeah. Customizable. You ask them, or you tell them what you would like on your omelet, and they make it right there in front of you.
I hope you guys enjoy that. I'll actually be in Tampa covering volleyball tournament, so I'm going to be getting rid of my ticket for this game.
So. You too will be enjoying free food.
Most likely. Yeah. It won't be as good.
No, of course not.
It'll be like Papa John's pizza, but sorry. I'm not one, as I've said before, I'm not one to complain about a free meal. So let's go on that my bet. You know, apply to the poor man over. FIFA, give out your Kyle.
All right, my Kyle Jackson bad angle of the week goes to Mr. LeGarrette Blount, the running back from Oregon. Not only did you ruin your own career, but you crippled my college fantasy football team for bringing it to its knees after I took you the third pick in my draft.
I like to say that I have Blount on one of my fantasy teams, and I'm doing awesome right now.
I have Blount on one of my teams as well. So looks like we were all affected by the travesty that occurred on Friday night.
I was hardly affected.
Thursday night.
I still have like 150 points right now. I'm dominating right now. So I'm sorry I crippled your team. Maybe you should have picked better otherwise.
Charles Scott just didn't get it done. Luckily, my boy Zach Robinson just balled out of control as usual and carried me to a victory. But LeGarrette Blount, I'm angry at you.
All right, so then is that it for the Kyles?
That's it.
All right, then let's go on. Let's give our Reggies out here. Deeper, start us off.
All right. Well, my Reggie Nelson Award for the Field of Excellence in Sport, or whatever it's called, is
close enough.
Is also going to LeGarrette Blount for throwing the dirtiest in-game sports plunge I have ever seen outside of Jermaine O'Neal on the fans.
After the game.
not game, but athlete sports plunge.
Okay.
He knocks, whatever the guy's name was, he knocks him to his knees, and if you watch the YouTube video closely, you can see that his tooth flies out of his mouth.
I'm skeptical of this. You have to make a believer of
this. This happened, and we will watch it afterwards.
This is hearsay and conjecture. So,
if there's a running back or a college football in the country with more street cred right now than LeGarrette Blount, I don't know who it is.
If there's anyone with less cred for being a college running back right now, it's not him, because he's suspended for the rest of the year. Enjoy.
You know, I don't want to hear all this, like, he's undraftable now stuff. No one cares. He'll get drafted. He'll be fine.
It's like a huge behavior problem that doesn't concern you at all?
Nah, I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is he's going to miss a year of college football. Nobody cares about your off-the-field issues if you can play. Come on,
yeah.
Have you learned nothing? Michael Vick is in the league.
I'm aware of that, but, like, you can't play if you're always getting kicked out of games and, you know, suspended.
Well, he can practice all season, so he'll be in shape. He'll work out. He'll be fine. He'll be ready for the combine. He'll run, like, 4-4 or something. All will be forgiven.
And justice will lose in the end.
As it usually does.
All right. You know, Kyle, Reggie?
Yep. My Reggie is... I don't have a Reggie. Nothing good happened this week. Nothing good enough to merit a Reggie from me, anyway. So I'm going more Kyle's because I'm just angry with some things that happened this week. Mine also is related to the LeGarrette Blount situation, but not LeGarrette Blount himself. I'm not nearly as mad at him for knocking that white guy out because he was clearly provoked. The guy pushed him and obviously said something to him to the point where Peterson, the coach for Boise State, like, stepped in and tried to get him to stop because he could see that something was going to happen, and then Blount punched him in the face. But my problem is that this kid got an entire year.
Yeah.
An entire year. Are you kidding me? Like, people do things way worse than punch a guy in the face off the field and probably miss no time or miss a week against a crappy team that the coach just decides to suspend him for. I was absolutely confounded at how he could be out for the whole year. And then even more confounding is that Hout got no punishment whatsoever. I'm sure he was verbally reprimanded by his coaches, but he's not suspended for any amount of time, despite obviously provoking that situation. Nobody came down on him. I don't understand. And then all the media people, first of all, the conference people, applauded Oregon's decision that they acted so swiftly against Blount, and all the media is just so happy that this is how this went down. Blount is just completely villainized, and obviously he did something wrong. You can never punch someone in the face, but let it be known that if I was in his situation, I would have wanted to hit the kid in the face for doing that.
I want to point out that I think Hout got his punishment enough by getting owned on national TV.
I mean, he got dropped too; like, he went straight to the ground after that hit. But also, it was worth noting that the coach was coming after Hout.
Right.
At that time, because he was trash-talking so bad, I think he shoved Blount a little bit.
Right, that's what I was saying. Peterson was trying to step in there. Arguably, Peterson got him dropped because he kind of redirected his attention. He turned his head. You could see that, what's up, coach, look on his face right before he got stuck.
Yeah.
So, Peterson, you know, not protecting his players. Bad job, Peterson.
He really ruined what could have been a great fight. Potentially.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. All right, I guess that leaves me to give out my Reggie. I'm going to give mine to Tim Tebow. Surely the first. I mean, I feel like you can give a Reggie Nelson to Tim Tebow every week on this show. But this one is not for what he did on the field, but for what he did off the field.
Of course.
Actually, he did it on the field, but technically it was an off-the-field gesture. Before the game, I believe the story goes that it was a kid Urban Meyer met at some camp with cerebral palsy.
Goes by the name of Boomer.
Goes by the name of Boomer.
I don't know his last name.
Yeah, but Urban met this kid, and, like, you know, this kid's really nice or whatever, and they gave him, offered a tour of the stadium, and, you know, came on and enjoyed that and everything. And Tebow met the kid, and Tebow, like, offered to wheel the kid around in his wheelchair before the game, which he did. And when I heard this, it didn't even surprise me. I'm like, oh, yeah, just, I mean, somebody could have told me Tebow's doing anything before the game for a charitable cause, and I just would have believed it. So when somebody says Tebow's wheeling around a kid with, you know, cerebral palsy in a wheelchair before the game, I was like, okay. Yeah, I bet he's going to throw a touchdown in this game, too. But, you know, all in all, you do have to give him props for that. It's a really nice gesture.
I haven't seen this YouTube clip, but the story goes, as told to me by another reporter today, as told to the group, that there's a YouTube clip of the kid, like, before the game. I wasn't sure the setting. I came in late, obviously, into the conversation. But the kid's sitting there in the wheelchair, and all the players are, like, jogging past him. No one really pays him any mind. You know, I don't want to paint anyone bad, so I don't really know what, you know, they may have been on their way out into the field. I said, I don't know what the situation was. But then Tebow, you know, in all his splendor, stops and kind of, you know, takes him and wheels him out and, you know, shows him all the love.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the kid, like, had a football in his lap or whatever, was getting wheeled around the field by Tebow. It's like
all the players signed it, from what I understand.
Really?
He took him around, they all signed his ball. That's what Tebow said.
Wow. I mean, just like stuff you can't make up about Tebow, the charitable work he does. It's unbelievable. But obviously we do have to give him props for that, so he gets my Reggie Nelson Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport. And that wraps up our show for today. Anything anybody else wants to say here?
Nothing else. How long did we go?
We're at about 40 minutes. I'd say we gave 41 minutes.
41 minutes of relentless effort.
Yeah, we couldn't quite get 60 out. We're a little
okay.
Yeah, we did better in Jermaine County.
Some plays take less long to develop, so we still got it covered.
All right, so check back later in the week. We'll have a preview of the Troy game. Once again, all that there is to preview for a Troy game. But check back later in the week. We'll have another podcast coming at you probably Friday. So thanks for listening.